Hey, we are finishing up a series tonight on the last seven sayings of Christ, the last 47 words that Jesus spoke. And we've been talking about this idea that if you knew when the last moment of your life was going to be, what would you want to say to people? Who would be the people that you would gather around yourself? What if God showed you when that moment was going to be, and he said to you, you can only pick seven statements, and these seven statements can only have 47 words, right? There's a weightiness to it, isn't it? But yet this is what we have in the Gospels with Jesus, the seven last sayings of Christ. His last 47 words, as you read them in the King James, that's where we get that count, right? The count's going to be different depending on what translation you use. But we believe that Jesus brought great intentionality. It's not as though Jesus' death took him off guard. It's not as though he was like, whoa, I didn't know this was going to happen. I didn't know I was going to have to be prepared to say something. No, he came into that moment with intention. And we believe that he picked all seven of these sayings, these 47 words, and then each week in the series we have picked one, and then we've done a deep dive and unpacked it, and we're finishing up the series tonight with number seven, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. We're going to start a new series next week. I'm not sure. I thought it was going to be a series on wisdom. Pastor Justin and I have been talking about that out of the book of Proverbs. So, but he asked me on Friday, he said, we still starting wisdom next week? And I said, I think so, right? Because we're not ever sure. And so as I was praying this afternoon up in my office, I thought, you know, maybe we're going to look at all of the post-resurrection experiences after Christ leading up to his ascension. So stay tuned. You're going to have to come next week to find out which way we're going to go. So, all right, let's read this one together. This is out of Luke 23, 44 to 49. It's longer, so it's going to break out into two different slides, but we're going to start with verse 44. We'll read it. This is Luke 23, 44. This is to 46. It says, by this time it was about noon, and darkness fell across the whole land until 3 o'clock. Now the light from the sun was gone, and suddenly the curtain in the sanctuary of the temple was torn down the middle. And then Jesus shouted, Father, this is the New Living Translation. I'm going to tell you why I've picked this and not the King James in just a minute. Father, I entrust, King James commend, Father, I entrust my spirit into your hands. And with those words, he breathed his last. All right, Eve, let's go to the next slide. 47. It says, when the Roman officer overseeing the execution saw what had happened, he worshiped God and said, surely this man was innocent. And when all the crowd that came to see the crucifixion saw what had happened, they went home in deep sorrow. But Jesus' friends, including the women who had followed him, we talked about that earlier in this series, from Galilee, stood at a distance watching. I think one of the reasons they were watching, they were just waiting to see, is he going to come back in this moment? It took another 3 days, but I think there was even in that moment some stir of faith in their hearts that he was going to be raised from the dead. So let's talk about this word commend. This is one of the reasons why we talk about different translations here at our church. This is one of the reasons why we use different translations here at our church, is because none of them get it perfectly right, and so some do better than others. And so in the King James, it uses the word commend. We don't use this word in our modern English language in our conversation. You might think, I don't know if I've ever used this word in a conversation. So let me illustrate it for you a little bit, just to help set it up. When we were in the Outer Banks, was part of the sabbatical that we were on, Vanessa and I were there, and Derek and Maya came down to spend some time with us. And so Maya, who was a vegan for much of her life, we've converted her to an omnivore. And so now she has this new love of steaks, and she recently discovered at our friend's wedding, Jonathan Adams, we were at Captain George's in Williamsburg, that she has this love for crab legs. We're like, come on, you know? And which is really just an edible spoon for melted butter, if you're into The crab legs. And so when they were coming down, Vanessa and I said, we have got to find a restaurant, a seafood restaurant, right? We're in the Outer Banks that's crab legs on their, the king crab legs on their menu. And so we found one that wasn't too far away. And so we went there. And so, of course, Maya ordered this bowl. It was their version of Frogmore stew. If you don't know what that is, then you're not from the South like me. But there were crab legs. There were like half chunks of corn on the cob, sausage, and then peel and eat shrimp, just this massive bowl. And so when our food comes out, all of our food comes out, but her food does not come out. And so we're waiting, you know, but we're on vacation. We're not in a hurry. So the server's apologetic. We're like, don't worry about it. We're fine. We're having a great time. And so we're just hanging out. And so more time goes by. And then finally, they bring her bowl out, but it's missing two of the four ingredients. It has the crab legs and the sausage, but it's missing the corn and the peel and eat shrimp. And so the server's like, I'm so sorry. I know you've been waiting. And then it's not all here. We're going to bring that out in a minute. So we thought it was just going to come in a minute. And so, of course, we're halfway through our meal. She still hasn't gotten the second part of her food. And so all of a sudden we see the server coming around the corner and they have this bowl, but it's not just a bowl with the pieces that are missing. It's another whole entree, right? It's more crab legs, more sausage, and all the corn and all the peel and eat shrimp. And we're like, you didn't have to bring all of that. And she's like, no, but you all have been so patient and so nice. And she put it down on the table in front of Maya. That is the picture of commend. Not overeating, because we also did that too. Because then we felt obligated to eat all the rest of that food that they had brought out. But in that moment, when the server put that dish on the table, they were presenting something for us for our approval. It was the restaurant's way of saying, will you accept this as an offering from us to you? See, that's why I like the King James better, because that's what the word commend means. It means to present as suitable for approval or acceptance. I don't like the translation that says entrust, because the implication there is that Jesus is saying, God, I'm trusting you that when I die, that I am going to be raised to life. I'm trusting you with this moment. But that's not what he's doing. The word literally means to commend. It's Jesus saying to God, I have done everything that you have asked me to do. Nothing has been left undone. I've prayed for every person, healed every person, preached every message, went to every town, every place that you ordained me to enter into, and all that you asked me to accomplish in the 33 years that you gave me to live on this earth when I left heaven to come, I present it all to you for your approval. I'm finished. It's why the saying that we looked at before was, it is finished. It's the reason why it is finished isn't the last thing that Jesus said, because it is finished is Jesus saying, I've accomplished it all. And now, God, I commend this all to you, for you to agree that all has been done, because there was more that God had for Jesus to do in the next mission that he was going to be given. See, if we don't get the words right, we don't get the meaning right. If we don't get the meaning right, we miss the lesson that God wanted us to find. Now, this word commend might be a little bit familiar to you, and maybe you've already thought of it. We use the word commendation. Maybe you have received, if you're in the military or in your workplace, you've received some type of commendation, right? It's an acknowledgement of your accomplishment. You commend your service, and a commendation is in turn giving. It helps us understand the moment. This word commends identifies for us a biblical concept that I'm going to call culminating moments. Let me read you this definition. It's going to come on the screen. Culminating moments are a bridge between now and next. It's the in-between. It's the end of one season or assignment and the beginning of something new. Let me say that again. It's the end of one season or assignment and the beginning of something new. A culminating moment means that you're moving out of one season into another. A culminating moment means that you feel as though you've accomplished one assignment that you've been given in life, right? Culminating moments. It's not just a transition that's minor. It's a moment that is altering in your life. I'm going to define it in just a minute, but let's do this because we like participation. When you think about your own life, and as we've talked about it, this idea of moving from one assignment to the next of significance, moving from one season of life to the next, what would be a culminating moment that you've experienced in your life? If you're visiting, you're like, oh dear God, he's coming off the stage. It's okay. Somebody, culminating moment. Oh, all right, let's start on the left side. Adam, yes, you just got married. You got married when? 3 months ago. All right, that's a culminating moment, right? Yes, change, significant change. Somebody else, culminating moment. Dave. Yeah, retired. You were in the workforce for how many years? 42 years. And you just retired how long ago? Yeah, and Kelly still has not said to you, you've got to get out of this house, right? Okay, do it on your own. Right? No, that's a culminating moment. Somebody back here, culminating moment. Pregnancy, absolutely. Blake? Graduation, for certain. You just graduated, didn't you? Yeah, all right. Somebody in the middle, culminating moment? Yeah, a promotion at work, especially if you were someone's peer and then you get promoted to be their supervisor. That's a really culminating moment, isn't it? Yeah. Somebody else. Stepping out. Come on, to serve here. Yes, you have your blue shirt on. Come on, why are you not clapping? Nobody's clapping. What's wrong with you today? Wake up, people. Come on. Yes, that's good. She wasn't a plant. We didn't put her in the... You're going to sit right here when I walk around. This is what you're going to say. Somebody over here, culminating moment. What about starting a new friendship? Starting a new friendship, for sure, for certain. Yeah. Yeah. Getting a new camper. Yeah, yeah. Somebody else? Anybody over here? Culminating moment? Yes, getting baptized. Come on, that's another good one. Thank you. Thank you. Come on. Right, you're getting it. Culminating moments are these in-betweens in life where we're moving from one thing to the next. And this is part of what Jesus is demonstrating for us on the cross. It is finished is not the end of something for Jesus. It's the in-between for Jesus for what's coming after. He still has more to do that there are assignments that God has for him. And in this moment, Jesus is saying to his Father, I have been faithful in what you have given to me, and I am ready, if you so approve, for what you have for me next. Culminating moments. Brennan and Katrina about ready to have their first baby. Come on, culminating moments. Brennan, her due date's today. Brennan was at base camp this morning. Was like, is there a baby yet? Which I knew there wasn't, obviously, because he should not be at base camp. If he's learned anything from base camp, right, Cam? Why are you here? You know, you've learned nothing from us, yeah? So he's like, no, not yet. So culminating moment, right, for them. Jesus is about to die for the sins of the world, and in doing so, he's going to conquer sin and death. He is commending his life to God. It is finished. And he is ready for what is coming next. So let's talk about how we recognize culminating moments. We see in Jesus' life and the things that he began to say leading up to his death that he begins to give us some indication of how we sense when a culminating moment is coming. The first one is this, is that a culminating moment is it redirects your future. It means that after it happens, your future trajectory of your life looks different than it did before. Right? It doesn't mean that everything changes, but it's going to be dramatically different. If you're married and you're getting ready to have your first child or just another child, you understand your future is going to look differently than it does now. Right? She talked about this idea of getting promotion. Your future is going to look differently than it does now. Culminating moment is your future is going to change. This is Jesus in John 16, where he talks about, I have to go so the Holy Spirit can come. Another sermon for another time. But Jesus is saying, my future is going to look differently, and then your future is going to look differently too, right? Redirecting your future, redefining your relationship. John 15, 15, Jesus says to his disciples, I'm no longer going to think of you or call you my servants. I'm going to call you my friends. There's a culminating moment that's taking place in Jesus' life and in his ministry, and it's going to redefine the friendships that he has. Sometimes it means that we move on from some friendships and into new friendships, but there's always some type of change. Even if you're staying in the same place in the community that you're in, it redefines. We're going to keep going back to this one. You begin to have children. You begin to add children to your family. You understand the dynamic that your relationship, if you have one child and then you have a second child, then you have a third child, right? If you keep going, every time you have another child, it redefines the relationships in your household. Reorganizing your priorities. John 14, 1 through 3, this is where Jesus says, I have to go to prepare a place for you. So maybe you've never thought of it this before, but Jesus dying to conquer sin and death wasn't just about him conquering sin and death. It was about him going on to the next assignment that God had for him. And one of the parts of that assignment is to prepare eternity for all of us who've made a vow of devotion to him. He says to these disciples in John 14, there's work to be done in the heaven that I came from so that it's ready when you get there. Come on. It's amazing to think that Jesus was at work for you when he was here on this earth, and he's been at work for you ever since he left. And then he says to them, hey, and one day I'm going to come back to get you so that you can be with me where I am also. So good. Every time we are stepping into or sense a culminating moment, one season to the next, one assignment to the next, there's this sense inside of us. We begin to recognize it. Maybe you've not put it together, but you are now, that it redirects our future. It redefines our relationships, and it reorganizes our priorities. This is not the first time that Jesus has experienced a culminating moment in his life. Culminating moments, sometimes you can have multiple culminating moments together. And we see this with Jesus. In Matthew 3, 13 to 17, we read about Jesus' baptism. This is a culminating moment for Jesus' life. It redirects his future. Up until that moment, Jesus lived his life in complete and total obscurity. No one knew who he was. He's 30 years old. It's remarkable to stop and think about that, isn't it? For 30 years, it didn't seem as though much was going to amount to his life, and yet he was the Messiah. So if you had young adults living in your basement, there's hope. There's hope. But he wades out into those waters. His cousin, John the Baptist, sees him coming. The heavens open. A thunderous voice of God speaks, this is my son that I love, with whom I'm well pleased. Stop it. A dove representing the Holy Spirit comes. That's a culminating moment in Jesus' life. His whole future is going to be different now. His relationships are going to be redefined. New priorities he's going to have. Disciples begin to gather around him. He enters into the ministry of being a rabbi, which maybe if we could just modernize it, maybe it's an oversimplification, but he becomes a pastor to a small group of people. Not too long after that, he has another culminating moment. In John chapter 2, we read about the wedding at Cana where he turns water to wine. His mother comes to him and says, hey, they're running out of wine. And Jesus says, hey, that's not my problem. It's not yet my time. This is a great story, right? The commands of a mother alter the sovereignty of God. So you better be listening to your mama. when she talks to you, just saying. Right? Jesus, God on this earth says, I'm not ready. And his mother says, you're going to be. And you know what Jesus did? He did what she said, even though he was a grown man. And sure enough, he turns that water to wine. It was a culminating moment. See, he was just an obscure upstart rabbi with a handful of followers. But now hundreds of people begin to look to him for spiritual direction. There's a whisper that maybe, just maybe, this could be the Messiah. Redirecting his future, redefining his relationships, reorganizing his priorities. And then there's another culminating moment, right? We could keep going, but for the sake of time, I'm just giving you these three in John 6. This is one that's often overlooked, and you might not even know that this happened, but there came a moment early on in Jesus' ministry where everyone left him, except for just a handful of the faithful few. The crowd that was following Jesus had begun to grow, and miracles as he's performing them, as he's traveling not just in Galilee now, but moving out throughout Israel, and he begins to talk to them about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. Yeah, there it is in John 6, and they're like, I'm out. Right? I think this could be a cult. You know? They didn't understand the imagery of what he was saying, that he would one day die for the sins of the world, setting up what we now understand to be the Lord's Supper, which points back to the Passover. They didn't make those connections. Not even the ones that stayed with him really understood what he was saying, but yet something inside of their hearts burned that he was the Messiah. See, sometimes culminating moments are not just the height of success. Culminating moments can be what appears or feels like failure. And in that moment, from the outside looking in, it looked like this upstart, this movement was just going to fizzle out. This was an important moment for Jesus because it was important for him to not be thrust into some position through public opinion to be a political savior. He understood that one day he was going to die for the sins of the world. And it was here in this moment that I think he began to craft his message of salvation for what we sacredly call the gospel. It was a culminating moment. It redirected his future, redefined his relationship, it reorganized his priorities. So let me give you just two pieces of advice. The first one is this: be faithful in your now and avoid chasing something new, something next. Be faithful in your now and avoid chasing something new or something next. See, we live in a society where we are conditioned to want the next thing. We live in a society where we are conditioned. Our brains are addicted to this hit of dopamine that comes, right, through affirmation that we gain through social media. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you need to check out the documentary, The Social Dilemma. If you have teenagers in your home, if you are a parent and they're not teenagers yet, you need to watch The Social Dilemma. It talks to you about the addiction of the brain that many of us in modern society are suffering under, and that many of these platforms are using that for your attention. It's powerful. It's revelatory. It's important for us to understand what's happening to us. They're playing on the brain chemistry that wants the next thing, that wants the new thing. The problem with always wanting the next thing and the new thing is that you miss the present thing. You miss the assignment that you're in now. You never get the impression that Jesus ever once lived his life in such a way where he could not wait to get back to heaven. It's powerful, isn't it? He came from glory. He laid down divinity. And for 33 years, he endured the suffering of the human experience for us. But never once do you get this glimpse of Jesus saying, I don't want to be here anymore. Jesus was always present in the assignment that God had for him today. And this is part of living a commended life. is to be faithful in what he has put into your hands now, and to not always be looking for what's next and for what's new. If you want a different future, how can you be more faithful in the spaces that you now occupy? It's okay to be dissatisfied. It's okay to experience discontentment. It's okay to carry some sense inside of you of there is going to be something more and there is going to be something next. I'm not denying that. I think those are healthy things. Aspirations are good, especially if you're in a season of hardship, which is one of the reasons why I included the culminating moment of Jesus where everyone left him. Not every culminating moment is a hoorah. You might feel like you're in this season where everyone has left you. It's okay to believe and to hope that there's a new season and another assignment. But what we do in that moment and how we respond matters. And the way we're supposed to respond, I believe, in part in that moment, is to ask God, God, how can I be more faithful in the situation that I am presently in? If you want more meaningful relationships, how can you be a more faithful friend today to the people that you know? Right? You might see people and it just seems like they've got all these friends and you're thinking to yourself, right? I don't have that many friends. And what I would say to you is that's okay. That's okay. Ask yourself the question, how could you be a better friend to the friends that you presently have? Because if part of God's plan for your life is more friends, a bigger circle of friends, the pathway there is going to be through being faithful to the friendships that he's brought to you today. If you want more responsibility, how can you be more faithful with what you have now? So this is how we guard against the impulse, the human impulse of next and new. It's how we guard against it. It's how we guard against looking past what is now, is reminding ourselves, no, I want to be faithful in my present situation. I want to be a better friend to the friends that I have now. I want to be more reliable with the responsibility that I have now been given. Be faithful in your now and avoid chasing something new and something next. The next one is this: be careful about locking in a vision for your future self. Eve, I don't have that one highlighted, but there should be a slide. Yes, he's on it. This is so important. Be careful about locking in a vision for your future self. Again, I'm not saying don't have dreams. I have dreams. I'm not saying don't be aspirational, right? I have aspirations. It's okay to dream. I would say it's healthy to dream. It's healthy to have a vision for what you want your future to look like. But my encouragement to you is be careful, because it might be that God's vision for your future is going to look different than the one that you have envisioned for yourself. Disappointment is the byproduct of unmet expectations. Is it not? For all of us, I'm not recommending the movie Tenet for you, so just be careful. Although I love that movie. For all of you, your present right now, at some point was your future. You with me? This present that you are now in, if you're old like me, right, 58, you have a lot of past, which means that there was a lot of times when I reflect back onto then and then think about what was then my present. At some point, that was my future that was unrealized that I did not know. Your present right now, your present at some point was a future that you did not see, that you did not know, that you did not foresee. And I bet for most of us, much of our present, we didn't even anticipate. Which is a reminder to us that the future that is still waiting for us as we are now in our present is the same thing. There's a life waiting for us in our future. God has plans and purposes waiting for us in our future. I'm not saying don't have dreams. I'm not saying don't have aspirations. What I'm saying to you, my encouragement to you, is make sure that you hold on to those things loosely. Because it might just be that God's plans and purposes for you in your tomorrow might look different than what you have planned for yourself. Let me give you three things again. Trust that God is in control. Trust that God has your best interest at heart. And trust that God is never overwhelmed by your mistakes. As you stand now in your present, maybe you're not in a culminating moment, but I think you know now after tonight that there are culminating moments that are waiting for you in your future. They're going to shift you to a new season that's going to shift you to new assignments. And sometimes those season and assignments are not the things that you necessarily anticipated. What I would say to you is prepare your heart now for those moments that are coming. Build in your heart now a trust that God is in control. Build in your heart now an unrelenting belief that there is nothing in this world that is outside of God's authority or his purview. Build in your heart now a conviction that God always has your best interest at heart. Even if it's not a culminating moment or an assignment that you would choose or a season that you would want to walk into, trust that he always, always has your best interest at heart. God never has a bad day. God doesn't experience the kind of regret that says, I wish I had done a better job with their life. Whew. Never said that, not once ever. He always has your best interest at heart. Whatever the assignment might be, whatever the season might be, it's God is in control. He always has your best interest at heart, and he's not overwhelmed by your mistakes. He doesn't look at you and say, I'm done with you because you've messed up too much. That's not how he responds to us. Now, can our mistakes derail things? I think that they can. Another sermon for another time. But even if our mistakes rise to the level of egregiousness that derails things in our lives, you know what I think God does? I think he begins to build new purposes and new plans for you. He never gives up on us. Even if we're that bearing on the shaft that seems like I've got nothing else to give, he comes to you and says, lean on me, and I'll get you through this even still. Proverbs 19:21 reads this way. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. You can make plans, but the Lord's purpose will prevail. So good, isn't it? You can make plans. You can have dreams. You can have aspirations. But it's the Lord's purpose that will prevail. In Genesis 22:1-9, we have the incredible story of Abraham, and God asks him to take his only son, Isaac, up to a mountain to sacrifice him. And this is a prophetic picture. Let me just throw this in for extra. If you are a parent, teach your children to walk with God and not your idea of what you think their future should look like. Teach your children to walk with God and not your idea. Can you have dreams for your kids? Sure. Can you have aspirations for your children? Of course you can. But my encouragement to you is be careful that your dream for them doesn't become something that displaces or obscures or blocks the vision that they need for the plan that God has for their life. Our responsibility as parents, first and foremost, is to nurture in their heart a love for their Father, to follow after Jesus, and that they understand and recognize the voice and the prompting of the Holy Spirit so that they can chase after for the rest of their days every season and assignment that God has for them, whether it's different than the one that we would have given them ourselves. Because in the end, these children, I have three myself, we love them more than anything else, more than life itself, but we recognize that these children are not our own. They're not our own. They're His. And He entrusted us for a time and a season to guide and lead and direct them. And one of the greatest responsibilities that Vanessa and I carried as parents is to make sure that we inspired them and taught them and demonstrated to them how to walk with their Creator. If you're getting a late start to that, it's never too late. If your kids are adults, listen, it's never too late. If no one did it for you, listen to me, it's never too late to begin to learn for yourself. Because children aren't just the only people in this life that we're supposed to show how to walk with God. It's people in your community. It's people in your workplace. It's people in your family. To be the light in the world that Jesus has called us to be, to point to Him, to follow after all the days of their life. Stand with me. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to go into this song. No? All right. They're coming? Okay, yeah. I looked around. I was like, where? I don't know. Father, I pray for people that are in this room, people that are part of our online community. I pray for people that are in the middle of a culminating moment, and I pray for people that are hoping that one is coming for them soon. Help us to be faithful with what You have put into our hands today. And help us to be willing to say yes to whatever You're calling us to in our tomorrow. Let's worship together.